Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This morning we'll speak a little on Srimad Bhagavatam and then about Jayananda Prabhu. The verse.
Kaye balistasya mahavibhute sahatvigacharya sadasya etat tadarsha vishvam trigunam gunatmake Utendriyartashaya jiva yuktam.
Word means kaye, in the body. Bali, Maharaj Bali. Tasya, of the personality of Godhead.
Mahavibhute,
of that person who is equipped with all wonderful opulences.
Sa Ritvik Acharya Sadasya,
with all the priests, Acharyas, and members of the Holy Assembly.
Etat,
this,
the Darsha,
Sa,
Vishvam,
the whole universe,
Trigunam,
made of three modes of material nature.
Guna Atmake,
in that which is the source of all such qualities.
Bhuta,
with all the gross material elements.
Indriya,
with the senses.
Artha,
with the sense objects.
Ashaya,
with mind, intelligence, and false ego.
Jiva Yuktam,
with all the living entities. Translation: Bali Maharaj, along with all the priests, acharyas, and members of the assembly, observed the Supreme Personality of Godhead's universal body, which was full of six opulences. That body contained everything within the universe, including all the gross material elements, the senses, the sense objects, the mind, intelligence and false ego, the various kinds of living entities, and the actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. Krishna is the origin of everything. Vasudeva sarvam iti. Krishna is everything. Matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha. Everything rests in the body of the Lord, yet the Lord is not everywhere. Mayavadi philosophers think that since the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, has become everything, he has no separate existence. Their philosophy is called Advaitavada. Actually, however, their philosophy is not correct. Here, Bali Maharaj was the seer of the personality of Godhead's universal body, and that body was that which was seen. Thus, there's Dvaitavada. There are always two entities, the seer and the seen. The seer is a part of the whole, but he is not equal to the whole. The part of the whole, the seer, is also one with the whole, but since he is but a part, he cannot be the complete whole at any time. This achintya bheda abheda, simultaneous oneness and difference, is the perfect philosophy propounded by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Kauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Adishatarine.
We've reached the climax of this wonderful Leela of Vamanadev. He has shown his universal form. We're getting some idea of what that means exactly. This is an astounding thing. We can just imagine everyone there who was able to witness this. Of course, it's inconceivable to us how it could even be possible, how you could see all of this. So you had to be empowered by Krishna to see it. Just like Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, I'll show you my universal form, but first I have to give you divine vision. I have to give you the right eyes for you to be able to see it. So everyone who was witnessing this, they've been blessed by Krishna, by Lord Vamanadeva, to be able to witness this astounding universal form, Vishvarupa. And we actually have a number of different kinds of Vishvarupas. Actually, when Krishna showed his Vishvarupa to Arjuna, he said, no one has seen this before. So here we're seeing, well, all these people are seeing it. So Krishna can show different forms at different times. Actually, he shows innumerable forms. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in one purport in the 10th canto, he describes how, because there are innumerable living entities, Krishna has a special quality to attract every one of them. So Krishna, and in the 3rd canto, chapter 9, verse 11, it's stated that Krishna responds to the bhava of the devotee. He appears as the devotee wants to see him. Lord Shiva, actually, when he taught the prachetas, his prayer to Krishna, one of the verses there, he says, I want to see the form that the devotees love so much. That's the form that I want to see, the one that everyone is so attracted to. So Krishna can manifest in different ways, and here he's showing, I'm not just a little boy, a little dwarf, Brahmada, but I'm actually everything. Now Srila Prabhupada begins his purport by quoting a few places in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that he is everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Prabhava, bhava, this root, bhu, means what gives out, expands. Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. This is the material universe. It's always coming into existence and it's always being destroyed. So, prabhava, what is coming, aham sarvasya, I, all things, prabhava, I'm the source of all those. And pra, you know, this prefix pra is expands the meaning of the word. It's like an intensifier, pra. Just like at the beginning, the second verse of the Bhagavatam says, Projita. So pra-ujita. So ujita means to kick out, and pra-ujita means kick out everything that's not bhakti, even liberation. So prabhava means Krishna is the source of everything, the unlimited source of everything. He doesn't run out. Mata sarvam pravartate. From me, everything emanates. So Krishna says it very clearly. In many places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna comes right out and says, I'm God. Still rascals, they don't take Krishna's words. They take the secondary meaning. There's a principle in understanding the Vedic literature that says at first you take the direct meaning. What's the obvious meaning? And if somehow that doesn't work, then you look for some secondary meaning. The example is giving, is a saying, Gangaya Dosham, or not Dosha. Anyway, it means the village on the Ganges. That's the phrase that's used. So when you hear this phrase, the village on the Ganges, then, well, the village can't be on the Ganges. How could a village be on it? It can't be floating in the middle of the river. So there you have to say, oh, that must mean the village on the bank of the Ganges. Oh, that's actually what it means. That makes sense. And the phrase is given because when you hear it, then you think, you start thinking other things about it. Oh, if it's on the bank of the Ganges, there are probably nice breezes there, it's probably a very nice atmosphere, and so on. So other things are implied by that phrase. So that's one reason why poetic, this is an alankar, you could say, to not describe it directly, but sort of indirectly, because you can get more. That's what poetry is about, actually. Real good poetry is suggestive. You don't just come right out and say it, but you imply it in certain ways. Or even that using alankar in prose, that same idea is there. Good writing is so is beautified by these characteristics. So sometimes Krishna comes right out and says things, and sometimes he says things indirectly. In fact, in the 11th canto, when he's talking to Uddhava, he says, I like the scriptures that speak in parokshavad. That means kind of a roundabout way. And he says he does that because he doesn't want everyone to get it. When we hear some, Krishna wants the students or the devotees to understand. But those who are rascals, it's all right if they don't understand sometimes. Krishna is revealing things that they're not qualified to see. So he speaks in a kind of roundabout way. Or the Vedas, they speak in a roundabout way because they're guided, they're guarding what is guhyatamam, what is most confidential. But we see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna comes right out and says what he means. Makes it very clear that I'm the source of everything. So of course Prabhupada, he would use this universal form to challenge those who say that they are God. We say, no, Krishna is God. And Krishna proved it. So you say you're God, so prove it. Show your universal form. There's an old story actually from San Francisco. One hippie was challenging, I'm God, I'm God. And the devotee said, well, show your universal form. And he said, here it is, look. And the devotee said, we don't see anything. That's because you're not qualified to see. Maybe he got a key from reading Prabhupada, I don't know. So we say, no, well, let's go over that hill then. We can see that. Do something else amazing. But you can't do anything. You can, like Prabhupada would say, that one, someone was claiming he was God, some preacher, Mayavadi, and then he had to leave his presentation because he had a toothache. So Prabhupada said, what kind of God is this? Our Krishna never gets a toothache. That's not a problem for him. And he can show the universal form, as he did here, to prove that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No matter in what form he appears, he appeared as a little dwarf. That doesn't look like God. People have a hard time believing that Krishna is God. What about a little someone who's only, whatever it was, 2 feet tall or something? That would really be hard. Or of course, Varaha or Kurma or so many other of the Lord's avatars. People say, no, that can't be. No, God is old. He's an old man. He must have a beard and so on. So a little boy, that can't be God. So he's saying, no, actually I am. You want to see? I'll show you. So he showed the universal form. So we want to go on and talk about Jayananda Prabhu. I was very fortunate. My early days in Krishna consciousness, I got his association. Like many devotees, he were influenced by him. Of course, I don't know how much influenced I was. I was able to see his wonderful qualities. I don't know how much they sunk in. But he, actually Jayananda Prabhu was especially noted for being friendly with the most fallen, so I can fit into that category. I had no qualification at all coming to Krishna consciousness. I won't even say what I was doing the night before. Then I went to the temple the next day, and the rest is history. So I wanted to start with something. You may have heard this, I don't know if you have, but it's really sweet. Srila Prabhupada is giving an initiation lecture, December 1968. And in the middle of the lecture, he stops for a moment. Apparently he has just, either Jayananda Prabhu has just walked in or he just noticed him. So then Prabhupada, he says this. I'm going to play it here. I hope it comes through okay. I'm just playing it straight from my computer. We'll see how it works. Let's see here.
Jayananda looks like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, you are tall and stout and strong.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have hit something. Let me try that again. I don't know if you heard it very well. Get back to the beginning. I don't know where the speaker... Oh, here it is. This is a new computer for me. I don't know how to run it very well. Put it down here. Okay, let's try this again.
Enter.
The cursor's not in the right place. You want to hit the return, Maharaj?
Enter.
Dhananda looks like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes, you are tall and stout and strong, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes. Very good.
So that's the whole thing. So Jayananda looks like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was very tall and stout and strong, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then you can see how Prabhupada's in ecstasy. He's seeing him and he's laughing. So giving pleasure to the spiritual master, that's wonderful. Actually, Prabhupada often, Jayananda Prabhu, he would always, of course, he was always working. He was always doing service for Krishna. So sometimes when Prabhupada would come to a temple, he would have to ask, where is Jayananda Prabhu? Please get him. And he would be out, you know, under a Rathyatra cart or working under a car or something. But Prabhupada would specifically ask him to come to see him. So I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1974 in San Francisco. So just by good fortune, that happened to be the temple where Jayananda Prabhu was living. To talk about him and my association with him, I have to say a little something about myself. I'm sorry. But at that time I was living in Sacramento, which is about 2 or 3 hour drive from San Francisco. And I got a pamphlet, The Reservoir of Pleasure. So it said, and I read that and it sounded interesting. So it said that there was a Sunday program and that it had a list of some temples, and the San Francisco temple was listed there. So I decided to go the next morning on a Sunday. But it didn't say what time the program started. So I arrived at noon, but the Sunday feast wasn't until 5 o'clock. So the devotees, they weren't quite sure how to engage me, I guess. They sent me over to the apartment of Keshava Bharati Prabhu, who was, of course, Keshava Bharati Maharaj. He was a book distributor, and normally he would have been at the airport distributing books, but he was sick that day. And so he was home in bed, sick, and the devotee sent me over there to be with him. So it turned out to be very nice. For the next 4 or 5 hours, he was talking to me, explaining Krishna consciousness to me. And all throughout that time, other devotees were coming in, just coming to see him, other devotees that lived in the apartment building, coming in to say hello and so on. And I was being introduced to them. And they were also talking amongst themselves. And one of the topics of their conversation was Jayananda Prabhu. So I hadn't met him, but I heard about him. And I was hearing these wonderful things about this person, Jayananda Prabhu. One of the things they were mentioning was that one thing that Jayananda Prabhu did, he did whatever service had to be done, he did it. So at that time, of course, the temple needed money, it always needed money. So he was selling incense. And what he would do is he would make accounts at different stores. Generally in those days they were called head shops, which means they sold drug paraphernalia and, you know, rolling papers for rolling marijuana and those kinds of things. And hippie jewelry and, you know, that kind of thing, and incense. So he had a route that he would follow all over the western United States, from Colorado west to California, that whole area. That was his region, you could say. He was the only person doing it. So he was out on the road, in any case. He was out on the road doing his incense run, as it was called. So when he was out on the road for some time, he wrote a letter to the devotees in the temple. He was very fatherly, and say, He was born in 1939. So he was older. Most of the devotees were 20, early 20s. So he was in his early 30s. So he was the old man of the temple. Devotees really looked up to him as a father. So it was like he was writing to his children. He was out on the road. Dad was away at work, and he was writing home to his children at the temple. And what he was doing was he was mentioning many of the names. There weren't very many devotees at the temple at that time. I don't know, maybe 30 devotees or so. And he was mentioning many of them by name and saying how much he appreciated their service. So it was really a wonderful example of praising the devotees. I want to point this out actually as one of the unique characteristics of Jayananda Prabhu was his glorification of devotees. He loved devotees, he loved serving the devotees, and he really didn't like to hear any negative talk about devotees. I remember experiencing, I wasn't able to move into the temple for like 6 months because I was in the Air Force at that time. But, you know, I would hear in the early days how, and I saw myself, that Jayananda Prabhu, if he was in a group of devotees and anybody started to say anything negative about someone, he would just leave. Oh, sorry, Prabhu, I have to go do this or that. I have some service to do. He didn't want to hear it at all. So he really took it seriously how important it is not to offend devotees or blaspheme devotees or say negative things about devotees. He didn't want to hear the least negative thing he could say about devotees. So he would stay away from that. And he wouldn't engage it himself. He himself would always praise the devotees. So when I came there in 1974, it was the summer, June of 1974. So Srila Prabhupada was arriving in just a few weeks. So immediately I basically took up Krishna consciousness right away. It was quite a quick transformation because, as I said, I was not into yoga. I wasn't a vegetarian. I didn't have any connection at all. But when I heard the philosophy, somehow it just clicked with me. So I took it up quickly. So I started coming to the temple on the weekends when I could, because otherwise I had to be at the Air Force. But I would come on the weekends, and because Jayananda Prabhu, at that time, then he was back shortly after, I think after my first visit, I think he came back that week. And he was working on the Rath Yatra festival. Of course, he would organize it every year, and he would also build the Rath Yatra carts. So he was working on that, so I was given that service when I would come to help him. I was a part of the crew, the ragtag crew that he would pull together to put the Rath Yatra carts together. So I was able to get his association there. And what was really nice was, I don't know if he was giving me some special favor because I was brand new, but he would often have to go out on errands. Well, when you're doing a big project like that, you have to run all over town and try to get this or that. You don't have everything you need. You need different kinds of supplies and so on. And so he would take me with him as he would go around to, you know, different places to get what he'd need to put the Rath Yatra festival, the carts together, and get permits and all these different things that had to be done. He was involved in all the aspects of the festival. So one thing I saw right away was how attractive he was to people. You know, he was a very handsome man. He was tall and, you know, stout body, as Prabhupada said, muscular, and always smiling and effulgent, actually, because he was so Krishna conscious. So he was very attractive to people. And he was also very comfortable being a devotee. He was comfortable with himself. He was comfortable with being a devotee. I was never so comfortable myself. Because especially in the West, you come to Krishna consciousness, and especially you start looking like a devotee with a shaved head, tilak, a dhoti, and so on. So, you know, people sometimes look at you a little strange, or they treat you a little strange or negatively, and so on. But he never had any problem with it. He was always just himself when he was dealing with people, businesses that he had to deal with, and people giving permits, and so on. He was Jayananda, and he was Hare Krishna, just always Hare Krishna, and he would tell people about Krishna right away, just spontaneously he would talk about Krishna. And even if people, you know how sometimes if people see us, they might get a little nervous, well, at least in the West. So he would disarm them, he would make them feel relaxed and calm. And we heard years later so many stories about how people would talk about him. They would remember him. You may have heard that Kalakanta Prabhu, he wrote one of the first papers on Jayananda Prabhu after he passed away. And he came across people who knew him as Johnny Ananda. Johnny, of course, Johnny is an English nickname for John. And it's an English-American name, John. So his name was John Court. So Johnny Ananda, people also knew him as John, Johnny Ananda. Instead of Jai, he introduced himself as Jayananda, but they heard it as Johnny Ananda. So some of them remembered him that way. But they were very, very fond of him. So this I saw in Jayananda Prabhu right away. Another thing I saw, which was a very pronounced characteristic of his, was that he was very, very frugal. Some people might say cheap. Very, very frugal. And of course, it was Krishna's money, and he wanted to make sure he didn't waste a farthing. Of course, that was Prabhupada's phrase, don't waste a farthing of Krishna's money. So he himself, he never had anything, basically. He never took anything for himself. Mostly when I saw him, I don't remember seeing him in a kurta, hardly. Usually he just had some shirt that he got at a second-hand store, or maybe somebody gave him or something. That's usually the way he dressed. In fact, the first time I saw him, going back to, I was hearing about the devotees, from the devotees about him. So the next time I went to the temple on the weekend, that was the following weekend, so Jayananda Prabhu had returned from his trip, and he was in the temple president's office, and I was escorted in there to meet him. So somehow, one thing I'll say is that the temple president was Bhaktadas. And Bhaktadas at that time was always very cleanly shaven, and he would wear nice silks, and he looked just pakka, you know, looked really nice. And that was one thing that impressed me, actually, of the devotees. It didn't bother me. Some people, they get bothered by the devotee's appearance. But I remember there were other devotees, too. One devotee, Brahmacharya, had just returned from India. He was clean shaven and shining, and he had a garland hanging over his ear. And I thought, well, this is really cool. So I kind of expected Jayananda to look like that. So then I walked in, and Jayananda was in work pants and a greasy shirt. And also, the devotees were often greeting each other with pranams. So when Jayananda Prabhu met me, he said, "Oh, Hare Krishna," and he put out his hand and he shook my hand, just like the Western way of doing things, to greet someone. So he greeted me like that. So it was a way of making me feel relaxed, I think. Like, you know, we're not so weird after all. If this could be tightened here, maybe because it keeps going down. If you pull this up, yeah. That should help. Thank you. That's good. Thank you. Yeah, so I was explaining how he was so frugal. And of course he was working. I'm sure as soon as he got back from the road, he would do whatever service needed to be done. Now the temple at that time, San Francisco, was on Valencia Street, downtown San Francisco, right in the heart of not such a good area of town. It was called the Mission District. Originally, the Christians, they had missions all over California. So that part of San Francisco, it was started as a mission, actually, a Christian mission. So that area was an old, old part of San Francisco. It was called the Mission District. But it was really the district for derelicts and alcoholics and, you know, down-and-out homeless people and so on. So one thing was nice that when I would sometimes come there, sometimes I was taking a bus or a train from San Francisco, and I would have to walk from the bus station to the train station and go through all this horrible neighborhood. But when you would walk into the temple, it was really like Vaikuntha. It was really so nice and effulgent and to meet the devotees there. But that temple, the building itself, had been a funeral home. Now in India, I don't know if you're familiar with this idea, but in the West, of course, Christian country, they bury the dead. So before people are buried, they're kept for some days in this building where people come and view the body. Actually, they offer their last respects to the body. And part of the funeral is to take the body in a casket, big trunk, and carry it in the back of this big car to where it's going to be buried. So that building, it had what used to be the funeral home part on one side, and then there was a big garage attached to it where the cars used to be parked, these big cars. So the floor of it was covered in grease because they would work on the cars there. And, you know, it was just an old garage. It wasn't a nice place. And it had a little, like a little office in it that didn't go up to the ceiling. It went partway up, like halfway up to the ceiling. So there was like a loft area above that office. And that's where Jayananda Prabhu lived. He lived in that little loft there in the garage. So he lived and worked there. He could be found a lot of times working there because he fixed the cars and he did all the maintenance in the temple. And he did so much service around the temple. I'll mention how he loved to serve the devotees. He always took the humble position. As I mentioned, devotees were glorifying him, the devotees who lived in the temple, but all around the movement, Jayananda Prabhu was known as an advanced devotee. I remember hearing in my early days that Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was a highly respected devotee, even at that time, he was an early sannyasi. So I remember hearing that Tamal Krishna Goswami said that Jayananda Prabhu is the most advanced devotee in the movement. So he was highly respected, but he was so very humble. He just did whatever service had to be done. He was always cooking. Actually, I'll mention just aside, he would often cook the Sunday feast. And that was another opportunity I would get to ride around with him because a lot of times they didn't have everything they needed. So on Sundays, you know, we'd say, let's go. We'll go out. We need to go buy some buttermilk or orange juice. They would make this nectar with buttermilk and orange juice and strawberries. So we would go out and we would get to the store and say, oh, I don't have any money. Do you have any money? So that happened repeatedly. So I started bringing only as much money as I wanted to spend when I would go to the temple because I know Jayananda Prabhu would take it all for the service of the Lord. So he was always in the kitchen and he was insistent that the kitchen be clean at night. And he would often be up late at night cleaning the kitchen. Even though it wasn't his, quote, service to do it, it's just somehow it wasn't done, so he would do it. Or in the morning he would do it. So one time, this was after I moved into the temple, I was a book distributor in the beginning, and there was we were distributing books at San Francisco Airport. And we discovered that the best time to distribute books, the busiest time at the airport, was around 6 o'clock in the morning. Because there were a lot of people who were commuters. They would fly between San Francisco and Los Angeles or other places. So it was busy then, so it was a good time to distribute books. Because sometimes it would get a little dead during the middle of the day, not very many people around. So the temple president had the idea that that's when we should go distribute books, 6 o'clock in the morning. So we started doing that, but of course before we went, we wanted to have prasadam, obviously. So who cooked our prasadam? Jayananda Prabhu. He didn't go to Mangalarti. During Mangalarti, he cooked prasadam for the Sankirtan devotees. And he also distributed, or served out the prasadam. We all sat down. Jayananda Prabhu came around and served us all. He would give big servings. He was a big man, and just like it said about Lord Chaitanya, he had big hands, so he would give big servings. So Jayananda Prabhu also... We used to, in those days, to save money, the temple, instead of having banana leaf plates or whatever kind of plates, we would eat off wax paper a lot of times. And when you put hot khichdi on wax paper, it doesn't work so well. It kind of burns through onto the floor. But Jayananda Prabhu would hold the wax paper in his plate and then fill it up with the khichdi and give it to everyone, serve it out. And the whole time he would be chanting Hare Krishna, smiling, and Hari Bol Prabhu. And he was just in bliss. He was just so happy to do it. One way I always like to characterize Jayananda Prabhu is that he was just a natural as a devotee. He wasn't someone who was... It didn't seem that way, at least. It didn't seem like he was someone who was fighting his lower nature and just trying, gritting his teeth and trying to be a devotee. He helped a lot of people who were in that condition, that's for sure. A lot of people that had lots of trouble in, you know, maintaining their vows and so on. He was very merciful, very friendly to devotees who struggled in Krishna consciousness. But he himself, he just loved it. He enjoyed what he was doing for Krishna. He enjoyed serving Srila Prabhupada. And he enjoyed talking about Srila Prabhupada. That's another thing I remember when I was going around with him to do different things. That he had recently gone to Seattle to see Srila Prabhupada. So he had returned from that trip fairly recently. And he was talking a lot about Srila Prabhupada. And how, of course, how he admired Srila Prabhupada and how Srila Prabhupada had saved him. He was in a very bad condition, a bad state of mind before he came to Krishna consciousness. He was very, very depressed. He actually had a degree in engineering, but he didn't take that up as an occupation. He said he couldn't mix with that crowd. He felt the engineers were in a higher strata of society or something, and he didn't relate to them, their airs of superiority or whatever. So he said, I couldn't relate to that. So he was just driving a taxi cab in San Francisco. And he was very unhappy. And he saw an announcement for Srila Prabhupada Bhagavad Gita class, and he went. And then that was it, of course. He became one of the pillars of the temple, the pillars of San Francisco, one of the pillars of ISKCON for so many years. And of course, his greatest contribution was his Rath Yatra. He started the Rath Yatra with the help of other devotees there in San Francisco. But he was really the person who kept it going for so many years. It was always difficult. The austerity of doing it. I know myself, after Jayananda Prabhu, he left San Francisco in 1975 in the summer. He joined the Radha Damodar Party. And so he left just after Rath Yatra in 1975. So a couple of years later, I myself and another devotee, we were responsible for the Rath Yatra festival. So, and I, of course, I also worked with Jayananda Prabhu at the Rath Yatra site. So what we had to do at that time was, in 1974, when I joined, the temple was in San Francisco. Then we moved across the bay to Berkeley, which is where the temple is now. But in any case, we always called them the carts. It wasn't the chariots or the ruts. They were always referred to as the carts. So Jayananda Prabhu would build them pretty much from scratch every year. So it was a lot of work. It took months of work and a lot of people working. And he would often live on the site. He would find a vacant lot in San Francisco somewhere and rent it for a couple of months and work over there and put the carts together. Now, San Francisco climate is not nice at all. You may have heard there's a joke by, what's his name? One American humorist, Mark Twain. He said, the coldest winter I ever had was summer in San Francisco. Because San Francisco, it's very chilly there because it's damp and it's cold and the ocean current is cold. So even though it's in California, it's in Northern California, it gets quite cold there. So working over there, the wind blows through, and it was quite austere sometimes working over there. And the other thing, which is, I'll just mention this because it shows Jayananda Prabhu's mood, was especially when the temple had moved to Berkeley, of course the devotees working on the carts were relying on the temple to send prasadam over. So Jayananda Prabhu, if he had hungry workers on his hands, that was a big problem. Because a lot of these people, you know, they weren't working out of bhava, they were working out of Jayananda's bhava, maybe. He would engage people, but they would start grumbling if the prasadam didn't come. So one thing that Jayananda Prabhu would do was, his solution to filling bellies was bananas and buttermilk. That's what he would do. He would go to the store and get as many bananas as he could, or he would have some on hand. He made friends with some of the devotees, would buy from the wholesale produce market. And there was one banana walla there who sold wholesale. His nickname was Banana King Louie. That was the name of his business. So Jayananda Prabhu made friends with this person, so he would often get tons and tons of bananas. So that's what he would do when people were really hungry and the prasadam hadn't come from the temple. Then he would go out and buy a bunch of buttermilk and bananas and just stuff them full of bananas and buttermilk so they'd stop complaining and go back to work. So that kind of became a tradition. When I was working on Rath Yatra, we always did that too. We tended to have bananas and buttermilk around to keep the workers happy. So that was part of his mood, was to always keep the devotees happy and make sure everything took place appropriately and the festival got done on time, because it was always a challenge. You may know in New York, the day before the festival, one of the canopies collapsed, and then they had to rebuild something from scratch. So I'll just mention one little thing. Toward Jayananda, there's a picture. Actually, I just wanted to mention this if you want to see something about Jayananda Prabhu. There's a couple of websites. One is called jayanandatakur.com, done by Vishoka Prabhu. But there's another one in Russian which I couldn't read, but it has lots of pictures on it, which was really nice. I was going through them yesterday. It's called Jayananda.ru, RU for Russia, and has lots of pictures. So one of those pictures there, it shows the devotees lifting one of the chariot wheels to put it on the axle of the rut. So those chariot wheels, when they were, Jayananda Prabhu had first made them, they were made of solid wood, no spokes, just solid wood, and very wide, very thick. So they weighed a lot. There's a picture, it shows 10 devotees picking it up from the side, off the ground, and pushing it up. So it was a lot of work. You had to have a lot of people around. And then to try to maneuver it, to get it onto the axle, it was very difficult. So Jayananda Prabhu had the idea to make metal spoked wheels. So he wrote to Prabhupada, and he told them of his idea. And Prabhupada wrote back with some skepticism. He said, I don't know. I think maybe the original wheels, they seem to be very good and strong. I'm not sure if this is going to work. But Jayananda Prabhu thought, it's so difficult working those big wheels. So he decided to do it. And actually, this is one of his engaging someone. He found some person who was not following the regular principles at all, but happened to be a welder. No one at the temple knew how to weld. So this person lived in this garage next to the temple for a few months welding the wheels together. And Jayananda Prabhu was giving him some money, and everybody knew that he was going out and buying alcohol with this money so he could work on the wheels. But he did this service for Lord Jagannath. But in any case, what happened, he only finished the wheels for two carts, Jagannath's cart and Balaram's cart. And Srila Prabhupada always rode on Subhadra's cart. So Subhadra's cart in 1975 in San Francisco still had the wooden wheels. But unfortunately what happened with the new spoked metal wheels, they flattened out between each spoke. So instead of having a circle, you had an octagon or a decagon or whatever it was. So all the way through the parade, Jagannath and Baladev, they kind of bounced along the way. Now I don't know if Srila Prabhupada said anything about it, but Srila Prabhupada had a smooth ride. Maybe this was just Lord Jagannath, he was rocking. Like they do in Puri, you know, they rock him when they carry him to the Rath. So maybe he was getting rocked on the way during the Rath Yatra festival. So there are many things. And there are many devotees who had a lot of association. I had association really for only 1 year, because then Jayananda Prabhu joined Radha Damodar Party. And many devotees have stories to tell about when he was in New York working on the festival. You know, that New York festival, it was such a triumph for Srila Prabhupada. He came to New York penniless, and then just a few years later he's riding in all his glory down Fifth Avenue with Lord Jagannath. But Jayananda Prabhu, working on that festival, he collapsed after. He was sick. He had cancer. He showed Hansarupa Prabhu. He had these big boils, like or big growths underneath his armpits. And then we have this wonderful picture of Jayananda Prabhu steering the cart of Lord Jagannath. You know, the jacket he's wearing, it was all dirty. But it was a little chilly that day. So he did, and somebody said, you can't go in the festival with this dirty. So he just turned it inside out, wore it inside out. And then he's, you know, steering the cart, as he always did. He always steered Lord Jagannath's cart. But after the festival, he just collapsed of weakness and exhaustion. So he put everything, you talk about giving the last drop in the service of Krishna, he certainly did that. And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm very proud to have had a disciple like Jayananda Prabhu. So what greater testimony is there to have your spiritual master say, I'm very proud to have you as a disciple. So, is Vidya still here? She's supposed to speak something. I've gone on so long. She was sitting there. I'm sorry, Mataji, if I spoke too long, wherever you are. So unless I should stop, I can, should I, if anyone wants to ask, is that okay? Yeah. Oh, Jayananda Prabhu's peanut butter halava outside. Oh, it's being distributed now.
Ananda Prabhu's samadhi is in Mayapur.
Oh yes, that's another thing. I haven't been there since that was installed. Jayananda Prabhu's samadhi is in Mayapur, the Jagannath Mandir there, up the road from the Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. So that's certainly a wonderful holy place to go visit. Let me just read what Prabhupada wrote. Actually, there are two letters. The first one was written to Rameshwar Prabhu, because Rameshwar had told Srila Prabhupada about Jayananda's passing, and Prabhupada wrote something. But I wanted to read the follow. First Prabhupada wrote something to Jayananda Prabhu, but then he wrote this follow-up letter to Rameshwar Prabhu. He said, "Jayananda's death is glorious. It is very good that he had stated, what is the use of such a useless body? Better to give it up." Actually, there's another letter around this time where Jayananda Prabhu sent some money to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, "I'm returning this money because I want you to use it for your health treatment." And I think that letter also probably mentions how Jayananda was worried. Of course, Jayananda Prabhu, he was supporting the temple by driving the taxi. And he also gave $5,000 of his life savings to Srila Prabhupada to print the Nectar of Devotion. And Srila Prabhupada acknowledges that in the preface to their introduction to the Nectar of Devotion. So continuing with Prabhupada's letter to Rameshwar, "He has left his body very wonderfully, and he has been transferred to Vaikuntha. I have already sent a condolence letter for publication and back to Godhead. Everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. I am very proud that I had such a nice disciple. If possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung in the rut of Lord Jagannath, and in all our temples a day may be set aside for holding a festival in his honor, just as we do the disappearance day of the other great Vaishnavas." You know, Jayananda Prabhu's pastimes continue after his passing. Well, we know many people spoke highly of him, but there's a story you may have heard that when devotees in Durban, South Africa were having their Rath Yatra, one man happened to be there, and he saw on the Rath Jayananda Prabhu's picture, and he said, "Hey, that's Jim Kaur." Actually, his name was James, not John. "That's Jim Kaur, my classmate." He was a classmate of Jayananda Prabhu. So he started talking to the devotees, and they told him, you know, what his position was in ISKCON and how exalted and how honored he was. So when he returned home, he wrote an article for his alumni newsletter. All was, "Hey, listen to what happened to Jim Kaur. He's like a real big shot in the Hare Krishna movement and honored, and I saw his picture." He told the whole story about it. So even he was preaching after his disappearance, because the devotees followed Srila Prabhupada's instruction and put his picture there in the Rath cart. All right, so I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Jayananda Thakur ki jai.